meets me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And as we settle in for another weekend of abandoned Manitoba, we welcome Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
So remind us what we are talking about this week.
Well, a month ago, we talked here about Dominion Bridge. That's an old Winnipeg company whose steel helped to build structures all over Manitoba. This week, we're going to consider an even older company that until last year contributed to the sights, the sounds, and the smells of the Point Douglas neighborhood. We're talking about Brown and Rutherford.
Ah, yes. Tell everyone who were Brown and Rutherford.
Well, one of the two namesakes for the company was Alexander Brown. He was a Scotsman who came to Canada and settled initially in Ontario, and there he met Canadian-born Thomas Rutherford. Both men had worked as carpenters, and in May of 1872, they arrived in Winnipeg, seeking their fortunes like a whole lot of other people. Keep in mind that at this time, Winnipeg wasn't yet incorporated as a city, and it consisted of relatively few buildings, most of them made of wood. So, of course, carpenters, this was great. They worked together to build houses in the growing city, because, of course, as the city got bigger, they needed more houses, and Brown and Rutherford, well, they were ready to do it. And they bought equipment to establish a planing mill, apparently the first in Western Canada, at the corner of Main Street and Bannatyne Avenue. To supply the planing mill with wood, Brown and Rutherford floated pine logs down the Red River from Minnesota. In other words, they were U.S. logs. By 1880, though, they began using Manitoba logs from a newly opened sawmill at Fisher River on the west side of Lake Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's super interesting that they were bringing in their wood from Minnesota at first, all the way down the Red.
Yeah, well, of course, it's downstream, so you just drop a log in the river and it floats its way down to Winnipeg.
Gets here eventually.
Yeah.
So tell us more about a planing mill. What is a planing mill?
Well, to get lumber to build houses or other wooden structures, one uses a sawmill to cut trees into boards of varying widths and thicknesses. These boards are then dried or seasoned to remove the moisture from the wood so they're less prone to splitting and warping. The seasoned boards are then passed through a planing mill to cut them to standard dimensions. Some of the seasoned wood can also be cut and shaped in various ways for use in making things like, well, doors, window sashes, trim, and other items that we refer to collectively as millwork. And this is what Brown and Rutherford did at their pioneering planing mill.
Yeah, that's going to be straightening the boards as straight as possible.
Right.
On all sides, top and bottom included. So how long did Brown and Rutherford operate their mill there on Main Street?
Not long, because in 1881, the city began to boom with the arrival of the Canadian Pacific Railway. Commercial buildings began to pop up alongside the mill on Main Street, so I suppose it just didn't make sense to take up valuable real estate with a lumber mill. So in 1882, Brown and Rutherford moved their operation to a site at the corner of Higgins and Sutherland, immediately adjacent to the Louise Bridge. And the bridge, incidentally, had been built just the previous year, 1881, so the railway could cross the Red River. You know, it was an ideal spot for their growing business, and it must have been a really vibrant place in the early 1880s.
A great location right by the river.
Right by the river, right by the railway, you know, for transportation of your products. Perfect.
You were mentioning sights and sounds and smells of the Point Douglas neighborhood. What did you mean by that?
Well, Higgins Avenue and Sutherland Street essentially bracketed the Canadian Pacific Railway main line. And these roads defined the industrial heart of Winnipeg as it existed in the 1870s and 1880s. It must have been an exceptionally loud and smelly place. You know, so sources of sounds and odors included things like the Vulcan Iron Works, established in 1874. On Sutherland, the massive Ogilvy flour mill from 1881 on Higgins, and now, of course, the din from steel blades cutting and shaping wood, as well as the aroma of sawdust wafting away from the Brown and Sutherland mill and lumberyard.
Right.
And these were just three of the larger operations in this region. There were hosts of smaller companies in the area, too. So Brown and Rutherford thrived, and everything went well for 18 years until disaster struck in 1900.
What happened then?
Well, whenever you deal with flammable materials like wood and sawdust, fire is always a possibility. In the wee hours of the 6th of April, 1900, Alexander Brown noticed fire pouring from a door in the mill building. The planing mill was utterly destroyed in under 2 hours, along with some 600 doors that were in the process of being made. Only about one-third of the mill's estimated value of $15,000 was covered by insurance. Fortunately, well, the fire was contained, so the office building, the finished lumber in the yard, and nearby houses were all spared. Brown and Rutherford looked at the damage, and I guess the business was sufficiently lucrative that they wanted to carry on, so they immediately began to replace the lost mill. That replacement lasted almost exactly 12 years before it was destroyed in a fire on the 26th of April, 1912. And I don't think they'd learned anything from that first experience, because this time the damage was much worse, amounting to some $200,000, and again, only a small fraction was insured. You know, it must have been so stressful to the two proprietors that I speculate that it may have contributed to the death from heart failure 2 months after the fire of Thomas Rutherford.
When you think about it, $200,000 in 1912...
That's big money, yeah.
Huge. And so did they rebuild again, obviously.
Well, yeah, of course. And this time I think they kind of went with what was going to be a little bit better protected. They built a three-story brick building. Of course, bricks are reasonably fireproof. Mm-hmm. And this building has stood the test of time. It's still standing at the site 112 years later. The business carried on. And in fact, in 2001, the Manitoba Historical Society, my organization, presented company officials with one of our Centennial Business Awards. That's given to firms that have operated continuously for over 100 years. But interestingly, the people who accepted the award were completely unrelated to the Brown and Rutherford families.
Yeah, tell us a little more about that. How did that work?
Well, by 1956, the company was being managed by a great-grandson of Alexander Brown. In other words, the family was still in control. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he died suddenly at the age of just 44, and this seems to have propagated the sale of the firm. Don't know quite what the circumstances were, but I guess they just felt they couldn't carry on, and so new owners, which incidentally was a clothing manufacturer, really had nothing to do with lumbering, I guess they decided to diversify, they bought the business, and they continued to operate under the Brown and Rutherford name. And it didn't have anything to do with those families anymore, but the name persisted, and they were located on the same site there on Sutherland Avenue, and were there, in fact, for the next 62 years. The company itself was resold in early 2018 to a building products company based in British Columbia, and they maintained the Brown and Rutherford name as one of that company's subsidiaries. So in other words, it was still there, Brown and Rutherford, but that's changed now too. So in early 2023, roughly a year ago, the subsidiaries were merged into the parent company. And as a result, the Brown and Rutherford name is gone. No more. The building and the surrounding lumberyard in Sutherland Avenue were also vacated sometime last year and in favor of a facility on the outskirts of Winnipeg. So those places now are standing empty there in Point Douglas, after having served the construction needs of Manitobans for nearly the entire history of Winnipeg. You know, we're celebrating Winnipeg's 150th birthday. Would have been nice if we could have celebrated Brown and Rutherford along with it.
And they kind of slipped away there. You know, you say it happened in 2023, because the last time I drove by there, it still looked like it was an open and ongoing business, but
yeah.
Gone.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I didn't notice it until just the other day when I was driving in the area and thought, wait a minute. There's no piles of lumber in the yard. There's no sounds emanating from the building. And I looked closer, and yeah, it's all boarded up and it's gone.
Not even a cake.
Nope.
No balloons, anything. So what is the legacy of Brown and Rutherford then in Winnipeg?
Well, it's nearly impossible to assess the degree to which Brown and Rutherford's wood products are incorporated into buildings well, probably all over Manitoba. If we judge solely by the diversity of its wares, you know, ranges from things like decorative millwork and doors to, well, church pews, the extent of its influence must be enormous. We do know that Brown and Rutherford contributed to the construction of such noteworthy buildings as the Winnipeg Auditorium here in Winnipeg. It's the home to the Archives of Manitoba and the Legislative Library. It contributed to the Hudson's Bay Company's downtown store, just in eyesight here of the studios. Mm-hmm. The St. Amand Center in St. Vitel, and, well, likely thousands of other buildings. Brown and Rutherford was an integral part of downtown Winnipeg for over 150 years, so with its departure, well, the Point Douglas neighborhood is now a somewhat quieter place.
Yeah, one of the last originals, if not the last original company. Yeah,
indeed.
Gone. Well, thanks for that. That's a good history of something that's been a part of Winnipeg history from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what's up for next week.
Well, we're going to stay on a similar theme, and another company that has been around for a very long time, in this case, 122 years, a company that compiled data about the city and its occupants that historians find incredibly useful. And so next week, we're going to look at a vacant building in the city's core that for about half a century hosted that company.
Get me thinking. All right, we'll see you then, Gordon.
Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.